Hey guys, welcome to episode 206 of the podcast with my guest, my delightful co-star on Stand Against Evil, Nate Mooney, and special appearance off mic by Deborah Baker Jr., another co-star. I know she's hard to hear, but we didn't have a mic for her, and hopefully you guys can catch a little of what she's saying. If she's not, I promise you it was charming and delightful, but we always sort of refer back to it. So hopefully you'll get a sense of some of the stuff she was saying. I think she was audible on Nate's microphone, but I'm not 100% sure on that because I haven't listened to the episode. But I wanted to thank you for understanding that I have not been able to put out episodes. I'm actually still sick, so it's been about almost 3 weeks now. And it's been a brutal but amazing experience shooting this show. So make sure you check it out when it comes out, Stand Against Evil. Shout out wise, I wanted to thank for your emails, Paula and Joseph and Kyle. And then I'll catch up on some more soon. But in general, I just wanted to thank everyone for the wonderful acknowledgments about this crazy bananas Emmy nomination that I'm totally dumbfounded and flummoxed by. It seems preposterous, but I will say that Christy Stratton, everyone's crazy, but us certainly deserves an Emmy. Anyway, so thanks for that. I hope you enjoy this episode. And there's a lot of mention of editing stuff that we don't end up editing out. So there you go. Okay, enjoy. You're getting the inside word. Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I think you want this to be more awkward than it will be. That's what I think. I think you want it to be awkward. And you just need to hold it just like I'm holding it right now.
Testing. Yeah. 1, 2, testing.
Yeah. We're way past that. I'm already recording.
Okay.
You're going to make it through this. I don't want you to...
Oh, I'm sure I will. We're in your bedroom.
I mean, listen, it is a little... It's a little weird. This is only the second time I've had someone present who wasn't an active participant with a microphone. This is something that's very common in other podcasts. There'll be like, oh, we have our intern who sits in the corner and like does internet research for us. Like, oh, Bobby, who did that guy play for? That's a sports reference. Mm. A very, very vague sports reference. I mean, if it comes to that.
And we have enough cable, I can just kind of mosey over to her every time she wants to speak up.
That's true. Or she can mosey over to you. Why don't you move that closer to Nate?
We just, yeah. We
are
just
you, this is, yeah, the microphone isn't that long. No, this
together.
Is all fascinating to the listener.
Oh, no,
you're connected
about
to
Deborah
your phone with
I.
your headphones that you don't need. Listen, let me just put this in context. We're sitting on the 20th floor of a building in Atlanta, Georgia. I am here with my fellow thespians in the, I almost said film that we're shooting. The 8-part film that we're shooting called Stand Against Evil. I'm here with Nate Mooney and Deborah Baker Jr. Deborah Baker Jr. will be the intern of this episode, mostly because I don't have 3 microphones. And so this is what you're going to be tasked with. I guess you can be our researcher. That's never been an issue before. But at the end of this episode, we play a MASH game, Mansion, Apartment, Shack, House. Have you played this in your life? As a child or anything?
Yes.
Mansion, apartment, shack, house. And then you list three things. Like, oh, what kind of car would you drive? What kind of that? So we will be doing a customized MASH game for Nate based on like things that we find out about him during the podcast, right? So if you hear something and you're like, oh, that could be a fun MASH category later, I don't want you to be thinking of things that way. So forget I ever said that.
Yeah. No.
But if you hear something, so like if he says that he, you know, hates horses, we're not going to have like a category that's, you know, 3 types of horses you would have. But if he loves gardening,
which he does,
we could come up with kind of a fun, like, what would your, if your current home suddenly had it, you know, an acre for your gardening, what, like list 3 different types of gardens.
So I got to talk in hyperbole all the time.
All the time.
Okay.
All the endless of 3.
Okay.
Everything has to be a trio. Nate, what did I say? You don't have to think about it.
No, I'm trying. I won't. I can't. Because I can't. You can't. Just, you have to not phrase it as favorite. Don't ask me anything about what my favorite is.
I won't, because we all hate
zero
that.
Zero response.
No, we all hate
zero
that.
Zero response.
We all hate. Who likes that when we're getting interviewed?
Yeah. I'm going to trust that you're going to pull these mysteries out of me.
Yeah, I'm going to drag them out, kicking and screaming. Okay. I want you to feel free to take off your headphones if they start to feel like they're encumbering you.
Oh,
in
no,
any
that's
way.
Fine. I thought we all, every time I see a podcast photo, everyone has, they all have headphones on. And
that's probably the more professional way to do it.
I thought you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
No. That yeah, one, maybe you should. You're the intern.
It might, yeah.
And those are noise canceling, so you just got to flip a switch and you won't hear a peep.
Oh, that's
out of
interesting.
Us.
Like, if we want a curse, then we can flip the noise canceling on, because I don't want Deborah to be shocked by our salty sailor mouths. Listen, I've had a great time shooting with you guys since we've been here. It is, it's a little weird to disappear to some new place for months at a time. Have you done a bunch of stuff where you've had to be on location for a while, Nate?
Or is it mostly I have been around a bit, and it does seem like I lost my ID the first week here. That tends to happen. So I try to travel light now, but I still need my ID.
That's true.
I've been to Australia and Hong Kong for jobs, and the last time I was on television, I was in New York.
Now, where is that?
Just up north.
I come at this podcast like I have no information about anything.
That's good. And Deborah's taking notes, too. She's going to go find out where New York is.
Deborah, where is New York based?
On it.
Where is New York based? Like, it moves around. Sometimes New York is in Australia. What were you doing in Australia?
This was years ago. I shot the film Charlotte's Web.
Mm-hmm. Did you play Charlotte?
No, this was the live action. This is that one with Dakota Fanning. And I played Lurvy, who is, you know, the bumbling farmhand.
Is that something? Do you enjoy playing bumblers? And I say that because I love the character that you play on our show.
Oh,
his name is Leon.
Thanks.
Drink water.
Thank you, Janet. I
love it too.
Oh, thank you,
Deborah. I know, we love it. We both have real talent crushes on Nate and weirdo crushes on the character of Leon Drinkwater.
It's the mustache.
It may well be.
Of course. I love playing bumbling innocents.
I believe I said bumblers.
Well, I just turned it into a verb.
It's a term.
Yeah. But there's bubblers from where I'm from. There's bubblers.
What's a bubbler?
It's a water fountain.
Oh, yeah. A bubbler.
Bubbler.
Where are you from?
Milwaukee.
I'm really glad that you segued into that, because it's in a key part of this podcast.
I figured it was coming up.
It's key.
Up.
Milwaukee. Now Milwaukee's in.
Deborah? That is Wisconsin.
Let me tell you a crazy coincidence. Listen, again, guys, and you regular listeners know, I don't control. I never know where anyone's from. I don't control the order that things often happen. I think the last two guests before you were both from Wisconsin.
There's a lot of us.
Mark McConville, Chris Tallman, two very funny gentlemen, both from Wisconsin. This is getting old, is what I'm saying. But neither one of them are from Milwaukee.
You know, I think I know Chris. I've got that pot blindness, but I think I know who he is. I think I've met him through many of my friends from Milwaukee. There's a whole bunch of them from comedy sports there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, exactly right.
Yeah.
Did you do anything like that? Did you do
any comedy
stuff?
No, I was, I kind of found the performer in me when I went away to college. And I went to college in Iowa. I went to Iowa State. And so I was never really home. Except I did go back after graduation, and I did some work with a children's theater in Milwaukee. And we went and did basically like PSAs to high school students about condom use. But, and
Chris Tallman did this.
Did he really?
Yeah.
And in Milwaukee.
Wait, Chris Tallman. See, now I can't remember if it was Chris Tallman or Mark McConville.
All of his cheeseheads get mixed
God
up.
God damn it. I can't remember. It was with one of the two of them.
I would love. I have to talk to him about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I worked.
They did the same. I can't remember which one it was.
Lovely
but
woman
them.
Named Deborah Bathurst who was in Milwaukee, and she. Yeah, we would go into schools and try to tell people, you know, advise people to strap on a jimmy.
Now, hold on. When you say strap on, everything that I think you might have meant goes out the window and it becomes something completely
yeah, I
different.
I don't know. I never wear condoms. Is that what they, is that how they describe it? I don't know.
I patently refuse. So, I already did my work on promoting it. I don't have to personally espouse that belief. What drew you to Iowa State?
Engineering.
Oh. Mm-hmm. What did you want to engineer? Bumbling?
I went went to school for aerospace engineering.
That's amazing.
I wanted to be an astronaut badly, like many.
I know, but you carried through.
I did.
So
well,
much
yeah.
further than
I the first step is I wanted to be a fighter pilot, so I wanted to go to the Air Force Academy, and I sneaked in with some kind of like alternate nomination from my congressman.
You have to be nominated by.
You have to be nominated, or you have to have a relative, or maybe immediate family member who is a Congressional Medal of Honor winner.
Goodness, I didn't know any of this. I guess why would I if I wasn't?
Yeah, it may have changed in 20 years, but at that time you needed to, you know, be a good student and an athlete and get nominated. And I was a good student, and.
And blank athlete.
And I was a satisfactory athlete. So I got the alternate nomination, and then, but then you get like a lot, you have to start filling out a lot of paperwork, and they wanted to know like every bone I ever broke and any, you know, cough I've ever had. And I said I had migraine headaches because I did really bad at the time, and they ran in the family. And that disqualified me for pilot training. And so I was heartbroken but kind of relieved because I wasn't, I don't know, I just wanted to fly the planes, but I really didn't want to have to follow any rules. So
you're a real Tom Cruise Maverick type.
Exactly. That was a very influential film. And I was, and so then I just thought, well, if I can't fly them, maybe I'll like build things like that. And, but while I was studying engineering, I started to do theater kind of on a lark. I had a roommate, my friend Donnie Becker, who was a journalism, and he wanted to be a stand-up comic. And so he kind of we started to watch like Letterman every night, and he made me laugh, and then I wanted to make him laugh, and we started to do theater. We did a play together. We took a class at the school for acting, and they were doing a big Kaufman and Hart musical. And the director talked Donnie and I to going and being in it, and that was it. I was kind of – so I did more and more theater. My engineering grades went from, like, straight A's to, like, C's. I smoked pot. and I never looked back. But I still got the degree. I still have the – the aerospace engineering degree. So
to me, what that says is if for some reason the three of us go out on a cruise, our boat capsizes, but we make it to an island, you're going to be a great person to have.
Yeah, we have a chance.
You're going to be a great person to have. I'll be useless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deborah and I will just try, we'll just be like soft chewing our way into hope you helping us survive.
Mm-hmm. I just a lot of fruit, and I'll start, you know, building something.
That's great. Was there someone? Now you say there had to be someone who won the Congressional Medal of Honor. Was that so?
No,
that,
no, unfortunately, no.
Was there anybody that you? I mean, I realize that Top Gun did have a huge influence on you, but was there anyone in the family? Because the reason I ask is it does seem to me like for a lot of us. There's this kind of crossing over from being a kid and wanting to do these kind of big pie in the sky things that have an attraction I'm not sure why. Like, why it's the dinosaur phase or the princess phase or the fire trucks or the astronaut. Crossing over to, like, what is also right in front of you, like what your family members do or what your parents do. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like on one level, if I look at these old, like, you know, I'm a kid books that my parents kept where you, like, but there's a pocket in each one for each grade and you put your little grade things in and, like, it has you fill out a little thing every year. Like, this year I want, you know, my friends at school were blank, blank, and blank. And when I grow up, I want to be, and there's like a space. And I feel like there was a point that switched over for me when I was really little where, like, I think I did say I wanted to be like a rock star or something when I was really little. And then there was this phase where I just said what my parents were. Like, I wanted to be a bike rider because my dad rode a bike. And I wanted to be, I said I would want to be a teacher because that's what my parents did. So did you have anything immediate for you to follow through that far? Was there any Air Force, pilotry, astronaut, anything like that in your family?
No, my whole family, we're just big motorheads. And so...
I don't even know what that means.
If it's mechanical.
You take it apart, put it back together.
Yeah.
How big is your family? Do you have brothers and sisters?
I had an older brother who was 5 years my senior, and he passed away 10 years ago. But he was in, my father, my grandpa, my brother. They're mechanical whizzes. And I was... a little more mathematical, like a little more in the head. So I thought, well, I wasn't going to stick around and do what they were doing. But with the motorhead, like my brother had the cars with my father and airplanes kind of, they still fit under that. They were like something that went fast, mm-hmm. and were powerful. And so it kind of was like my thing. So like it was, I think I was staking out a corner of father-son relationship.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't really think I can honestly say, like, a lot of that stuff's never gone away. I still want to, like, be a paleontologist. And I still would like to be a fighter pilot, though apparently now I throw up on roller coasters. So.
Uh-huh. Maybe if there was a real professional reason you had to learn how to be great at that.
Or if I had to get us off an island.
Yeah.
But...
an island full of roller coasters.
If it's leisurely...
We're going to have to roller coaster our way off this thing.
Yeah, so things change. But what hasn't changed is all those, I think, same desires and of wanting to, like, dust off bones that I found in a, you know, hillside. You just start
human bones.
I think you have those dreams, but you immediately have to start making compromises.
Yeah.
And so you don't become the astronaut, but, you know, you fly kites as a hobby. You know,
very similar.
Yeah, you just have to.
That was like you went from A to N, not like A to B.
Yeah. No, I actually, there's a middle ground. I learned how to fly when I was in college.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. I was going to say, did you at least get a pilot's license?
I got a pilot's license. I think this is kind of unique to schools that are out in the middle of nowhere, because it was an actual lab. Like, it was a class and I paid a lab fee.
Oh, that's cool.
And at the end of the year, I was a private pilot. And it was beautiful. It was, to fly in a place like Ames, Iowa, it's in the middle of nowhere. It's like 40 minutes north of Dubuque, and it's just surrounded by green fields, and then in the fall, just brown fields. But it's really peaceful because I felt like I had like the entire state to myself when I was flying.
Have you had that that desire to be alone? That sort of desire, is that part of the? Because for me, I'm a total introvert in many ways, but the idea of being in space is terrifying to me. Loneliness, fear, panic.
No, I think it's the closest thing to like a religious experience for me. Like I've always, I may have to backtrack on it, but I always have felt innate like that I was made to be stuck in a capsule. and just sent
I wish that I had that because I admire that so much, and I'm so glad that you have capsulitis. That's profound to me. Because again, I really love being alone, and I seek out solitary sports. Like, you know, if I felt like it was, there are things I do that probably aren't safe that you shouldn't do by yourself because if something happens and you're by yourself. So I get that. But yeah, take the idea of taking it to that place. I feel just picturing it, like there's an ache inside of me that I can access very quickly. That's like, that's too far.
Yeah,
but when I watch space movies, I want that. You know what I mean? I want to be out there, but I can't do it.
Yeah, there's no doubt that I really, really romanticize it. I know that. And I know that I could be like just like 15 minutes into like the thing being shut and leaving Earth orbit. And I'd be like, oh, God.
Except that it's like I was listening to an interview with an astronaut who says, you know, that's a thing that he gets asked all the time. And he's like, you know, it's not like it's tomorrow or 2 weeks from now. You get 2 weeks of training and then you're in space. That if you do spend 10 years of your life training specifically for the feeling of being in that capsule, that by then, obviously it's still nothing that you've ever quite experienced, but that you really have spent a controlled amount of time like preparing for dealing with that existential feeling, kind of, you know?
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, they really break you down. You're not anticipating digging your teeth into a peach anymore.
Mm. Did you say that because we're in Georgia?
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. I felt like I should
shout out to peaches.
Connect the Georgian peaches to our time here. I've had some good peaches. I had yogurt with blueberries and peaches, which I thought was a really pretty plate of food.
Oh, yes, indeed.
No, a couple days ago.
Do you like to cook?
No, I don't.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Is it a thing that you've tried and done and know you don't like, or is it a thing that you don't really have? Because cooking is chemistry, right? There's a science to it. And if you like sort of deconstructing and reconstructing or anything like that, do you have a curiosity about it the way you do about machinery, or is it just like, This looks good. I'm going to put it in my mouth. I don't care how it got here.
By the time we get back to Los Angeles, he's going to be a cooking wizard.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah. I'm trying to change. I am... can I tell them, Deborah?
Sure, you can tell them.
Thank you. I'm going to be... Deborah was sweet enough to gift me with a peach dish meal because she knows that I have been... I'm going to consider doing the meal delivery services.
Mm-hmm. Where they send all the ingredients to you and the recipe.
You know, it's like, here comes the chemistry kit full of what you're going to cook up for yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to do that. But it is overwhelming. There's a lot of options. And Deborah's been kind enough to help narrow it down. And I'm going to be making my first peach dish, which is, I think, like really, really tasty.
Yeah.
It's a really good one.
What is it?
It's an Atlanta-based, Georgian-based food delivery company, but they do. They've got a situation in L.A., and it's got, you know, it's like southern, southern comfort, like good, like rich food.
That's,
I would imagine.
I think they have healthy options.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I mean, if it's natural, it's got to be healthy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's just a struggle. I think. The same way with the astronaut stuff. Like once I had like astronaut ice cream and saw that they were like eating like a, you know, turkey dinner out of a tube, I was like, yeah, that's good enough for me.
Right.
And I just don't have the time, and I'm really, really intimidated by it. And it's so much so that it's like I should see a therapist.
Well, I guess I'll gift you therapy. Be lessons yes. To do in concurrence with your, Listen, more people should give each other therapy gifts.
That's
probably
true.
Would help a lot of us out. More people. Yeah. Some of us are falling apart over here. That is interesting, though, the idea that you would be intimidated by that when you're not intimidated by things that I would find so befuddling. I do not have the... I feel like I have a... I like seeing other people get excited about taking things apart or wondering how things are made. But again, that's sort of something that is wildly intimidating to me.
Yeah, and I, you know, it is. It's surprising because you'd think that that and I'm sure they do, like you cooking a meal and taking apart a lawnmower, probably access the same part of the brain.
Mm-hmm. But at the end of the meal, that was the sound of eating something satisfying.
Have you ever mowed the lawn? That's satisfying,
true.
Too.
Listen, some people like the taste of wheatgrass. That's like you mow the lawn, oh, you have a delicious taste of greens in your mouth.
Do you have the ability to like bleep swears out?
Well, I don't. The swears are not remotely
I'm a total
here. They're welcome.
I feel like I'm just sitting on my hands over here. I just, I, you know,
oh, you can
I just.
Let her rip. Let her rip.
I
curse all the time on the podcast.
Oh, God. Yeah, so many swears come out of my mouth. That's what I'm just.
You're a good boy, Nate, to even worry about that.
Well,
you're welcome to.
Just wanted to feel like could be like Harvey Keitel in here and just
level everybody with a bunch of crazy.
I think people like if you're from like an urban area like New York, everybody gets like you can swear, but I think people would be shocked at how filthy we are in Wisconsin.
I guess I'm prepared for. Listen, what I know about Milwaukee is from Laverne and Shirley. So, right? Is that in there? Is it set there?
Yeah, and Happy Days.
Brewing companies. That's what
I
understand.
Yeah, they
work
at a brewery.
Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That's all it is. One big brewery. It's like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, but it's a city and you all make beer.
And sausage.
Oh, is there sausage there?
There's like sausage, yeah. Some like hams. Who knows? It might have all gone to shit by this point. I know there's not.
When was the last time you've been back? Deborah's going to Google, has Milwaukee gone to shit?
Do ham. And
ham?
Ham and cut a hay.
Oh, how do you spell that?
Cudahy, I think. I'm a bad cheese head.
Oh, yeah, cheese. Wisconsin. Come on, Janet.
Yeah, I try to get back about once a year, the holidays. It's always in, the winter, and it's 0 degrees and a foot of snow.
Are your parents still married?
Mm-hmm. They just celebrated their 50th anniversary.
My. Yes. Congratulations.
Yeah, just like a few weeks ago.
We've actually got him here for you. Could you come in here? For they're a jolly good fellow. I don't know what you sing when it's someone's 50th wedding anniversary. I have a limited repertoire for congratulatory songs. We could write one right now. You've been together 50 years.
50 years.
Isn't it great? And you have a charming son. His name is Nate. That's a very specific song that's only for your parents. Do you mind if I ask how your brother passed away? Ooh, that's awkward, but now I'm thinking about it.
He had a brain tumor.
Oh, Nate.
And, it was a long haul because he did have surgery and went into remission, but it came back.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I don't. Yeah. What do you? It's very strange. There was a major milestone that, and I kind of feel like I'm perpetually living in that moment. But the moment that I became older than my older brother, it feels now like that I'll be stuck in that perhaps forever, that feeling.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem natural. And I know it, like, and from my parents, I know it was to see that, the pain of parents to lose a child too. It's, death never really seems, it makes sense. I mean, I'm not about to say it doesn't make sense, but it's never easy. And,
well, that's the sort of, just not to get so big picture, but it feels like that is kind of like our humankind's ultimate curse is being aware and sensitive enough to understand something, anticipate something, and then be completely undone by it, and to be afraid of it, to know it's coming and to be afraid of it, or to have it be this abstract thing and then to have it become incredibly real on an incredibly personal level. Like this idea that we're supposed to be like, well, it's natural. And it feels like when it happens, it feels the most, to be the person who doesn't leave, it feels the most unnatural, strangest thing, rather than like, well, this is what our bodies do. I can't, that's it. That's sort of the hardest thing about being a person, I think, instead of a dog, you know? Yeah,
it's a real letdown.
It's a real bummer, isn't it?
Yeah, to be self-aware and then be so powerless.
Was it something that you're, and I will absolutely change the subject, but it, I think a lot of, and by the way, this, what we've had, so many of my guests have had strange and shocking and horrible and bittersweet and wonderful and weird things happen in their lives. And, but I think there are listeners who have had things happen to them, tragedies happen to them. And the family that you come from and the way that's communicated between family members, I think is, so varied as well. Did you have a family that could, did you feel like there was grieving? Was there like, is it something that you connect with your parents about, or they, were they more sort of like, let's not deal with this. Do you know what I mean? Some families are different about
well,
it.
It didn't go over well. I mean, it was tough. I mean, I think it's stressed my parents' marriage to its limits. My brother passed away with my parents and myself arguing in the hallway of the hospital, and then when we got back in the room, he was gone. We didn't deal with it well, and it was tough. I didn't feel like I could provide much comfort. Everybody was on their own, and I mean, I don't think that's always the case, obviously. It was really hard for our family.
I really went down a rabbit hole, didn't I? By the way, I can edit all of this out. If later today you're like, I don't really want to talk about that. Like, I wish I wouldn't have talked about that. Please know that I will happily extract it.
We'll just go straight to Milwaukee.
Yeah. It'll be hilarious. It'll be hilarious. I guess ultimately what I am wondering is, do you feel like you've come to a peace about it enough so that if I said, you know, for some of our younger listeners who have gone through stuff like this, which they 100% have, do you have any advice on sort of how, particularly if you don't have the ability, if you don't come from a family that, where you can sit together in a room and cry and hold hands and embrace each other and talk about it, what has worked in terms of coming to a peace with it or feeling still close to that person, even though they're not, you can't pick up the phone and call them, that sort of thing?
I think luckily, my brother and I shared activities that I'll never, I don't forget. And so there, I find opportunities in my life where I feel like I'm in communion with him, and it helps because I was away for like all the years that he was sick. Ever since I went to college, I've not been really home. So I felt and still do. I think there's like there's elements of shame.
Of course.
I think you
would feel that no matter
what. That lack of closure. And so those moments where I feel like I'm close to him, and it's fitting because so many of our activities where I'm close, we're still independent. And I'll explain.
Like, yeah.
But we, for instance, snowmobiled a lot, and being from Wisconsin, and we would go up to the North Woods of Wisconsin, and they have these trails for hundreds of miles, and we would race around on these snowmobiles, and my brother would just be on his snowmobile, you know, 300 feet ahead of me, and we'd just be racing through the woods, and there'd be white powder flying everywhere, and I'd just be zoning in on his taillight and trusting him that he's not going to take us too fast into the next turn and that kind of thing. But that was so many of the activities that it's a weird thing because it's weird to feel like you're sharing something with somebody, but then you're 300 feet behind them in a helmet, going 100 miles an hour. But that was, and I think that's luckily or fortunately quality of that experience helps me still feel like I'm connected now when he's not here.
I love that. That's exactly the kind of stuff that I have a similar experience where I lost someone and she was a cyclist and I am a cyclist, and that's not, unless you're riding side by side,
yeah,
it's not, you know, which people do. People do take these sort of leisurely rides with their chamois shorts and their gloves and their helmets, like we all have, if we're serious. But I definitely prefer the like aggressive cycling that it's impossible to speak. But that's my favorite kind of thing, right? Is this sort of the being near someone and feeling like you're participating in something together, but not necessarily having a conversation about what you're doing or really about anything else, is just one of my favorite things in the world. And it does create a closeness that is maybe easier to pull than if it was someone that you talk to on the phone every day, you know? So that does feel like a gift. I can't think of any way to get back to whether Milwaukee has gone to shit or ham than this moment right now. So would you like to report in, and would you like to hold the microphone to Deborah's mouth?
Of course.
Sure.
I already cut a hay. Is that what you say?
Oh, I looked that up too. But I did look up, has Milwaukee gone to shit?
Wonderful.
And Reddit has something on it. There's... also,
is there a thread? Is there a thread where people argue about whether it's gone to shit or not?
Yeah. I don't know, but now this person's talking about some like proverb from the Chinese. I don't know. It's well known that they've been bought by the Chinese.
Oh, I see. I see. I see.
Yeah, YouTube has documented their fall from grace. I'm not a big fan. I don't know.
This is all very positive.
It's just terrible. But let's look at the ham. Patrick, how do you say his last?
Patrick Cudahy.
Yeah, smoked ham. It's a lovely website. I'd buy this sweet applewood smoked ham. I think. Yeah.
Did I just find a new podcast sponsor? And by that I mean the only podcast sponsor I would ever have.
Ham off the bone quarter. Sliced ham off the bone quarter. Smoked pit ham. These look lovely.
Relief. How dare people say steak. Milwaukee's gone to shit?
They still got their ham.
Ham and some beer. What else do you need?
Same way since 1888.
Oh, speaking of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, back in at Trader Joe's, I can't vouch for all Trader Joe's, but I've come across Trader Joe's in Los Angeles that are carrying... is it strudel?
I was gonna say all of this sort of like the, I'm always interested in the northeast Midwest north. What do we call that?
It's
the Great Lakes area.
The Great Lakes.
That sort of the migration of a very specific like Scandinavian and German ancestry is fascinating to me. Not anything I have in my lineage, but really? I know everyone thinks that, but it's all like Scottish and Welsh and that's about it. I'm one of those kids who totally grew up on Lake Wobegon because my mom and dad both, although never together, loved A Prairie Home Companion. And yeah, from some really early age, like, I think I felt like those are my people. And also up into Canada, I have none of that. There's no heritage in any way related to that. But do you know what your like sort of family history is? Is that something that you're aware of? Like, oh, well, my people came in from, they came in on a ship made of strudel. I don't know how ships are built. You're the engineer. You tell me.
They're not made out of pastry.
God, I have such a smoker's laugh right now. I sound like I smoke.
Ugh. I know, we're doing this first thing in the morning, pretty much. And
yeah.
My voice is always deep.
I'm going into my third week of sickness. It's it. I took my last one today.
You're going to get better so fast.
Can I just say it's Danish Kringle from Racine, Wisconsin that's available at some participating
Trader
Joe's.
Yeah, the Danes, man. I wish I were Danish.
Yeah, they're so happy.
They're Danish.
They're just... What a group.
I'm a terrible intro.
No, this is wonderful. No, this is... There's more information coming out in this podcast episode than has ever been revealed on this podcast before. Side note, I just want to say a quick thing because when you talked about eating some nice peaches here, I wanted to say, as you two know, I was back in Los Angeles for less than 24 hours. In that 24 hours, I, number one, got a bug bite when I never get bug bites in Los Angeles and should have only gotten bug bites every day here in Georgia, and ate a peach on the set of You're the Worst, have not eaten any peaches in Georgia. So I've done two key Atlanta things only in the 24 hours as in Los Angeles.
You missed us so much.
That's it.
Yeah.
I was trying to connect with my new home of Atlanta, which is kind of how it felt. I was like, oh, I got to get out of here and get back home to Georgia.
Go to McDonald's, get a McRib.
Yeah, I got to get a McRib. You love strudel.
What's Kringle?
Danish Kringle.
It's Kringle.
What's Kringle versus strudel?
It's like a circular crepe, kind of. Like, it's not a crepe, but it's like a flaky pastry.
Yeah.
And then it's stuffed with like raspberry filling, and then they load like that white frosting on it.
That sounds great.
Yeah, they're delicious.
Like a wreath.
Let me see this.
It's a wreath of sugar and flour.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And they come in these really awesome little wax sleeves like they used to... deliver pizzas in. So check it out. Yeah.
Now let's just get into this because I will say this. That's a nice looking group of people who know how to make a nice Danish pastry. You might be, I dare say you are, the only boy of summer I have had, because the rest of you I interview women, who enjoys the concept of, or at least that I know of, where it's come up. But many a listener, male and female, of my podcast enjoys miniatures.
Oh.
Many a guest has loved miniatures.
Yeah.
Let's get right into
Please do.
Is that something that you knew you were interested in? Like, would that have been a thing where if a girl had a dollhouse when you were younger and you would have been like, oh, I'm a boy, I can't have one, or could you have one?
I can't say that I was enlightened enough that I'd like just rock a domestic scenario.
Yeah.
But I did play with all the like the G.I. Joe toys and the wrestlers, and I had a couple friends, Jeff and Nate Nickerson, who they just got everything. And so you'd go, if they had all the Star Wars stuff, they had all the G.I. Joe. They even had, you know, like toys from that cartoon Mask. The Stretch Armstrong, the wrestlers.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
And so I never shied away from, like, just make-believe, you know, running around with the little action figures and stuff. And then I've built models, as I think a lot of, like, you know.
There it is. There's a good link right there.
And
built model, built model airplanes, built model.
Yeah, anything. Like, yeah, airplanes, motorcycles. It was always real things. You know, it wasn't like some of the, like, sci-fi stuff. But
yeah, Roman was working on, like, painting some sort of one of those, like, cool Japanese robot transformer type things. But that seems like it's more pervasive now than it was.
It is.
We didn't have that, really.
I mean, it definitely grew in popularity. But when I was younger and child, it was mostly like airplanes and ships and cars. But I sucked at it. I was like 12 years old, and I didn't have the patience.
Yeah.
I put those kits together in like a weekend. And it was just sticky like fingerprints and globs of glue, but that wanting to do that, wanting, like, it's like my equivalent of like a Fabergé egg, you know. I just want to sit there and like rotate it. And so when I became an adult, actually when I moved to LA, when I had some space, I went to the hobby store and I just loaded the car up. Air compressor, airbrushes, polystyrene, acrylics, I have everything. And I've started to build models again. And I now I have the patience. And now I can, you know, take a year to do something. It's very fun. And I kind of want to take it to the next level, which is...
What's the next level?
With dioramas.
Oh God, Nate, that is one of my favorite words. It bothers me that it sounds like diarrhea because it is music to my ears. I am obsessed with dioramas. These guys know. I love everything that you just said. Side note, Kate Micucci has an impressive model train situation, and my dad, who I was like, I don't know where I get this because I still hold on to that. And listen, I think it's something that people are interested in, but you can tell the difference between, like, there are some people who are like, that means nothing to me. I think most people fall somewhere in the middle where they're like, oh, that's neat. Like, oh, that's really neat. It's interesting to see other people's interest in it, kind of like me saying, like, oh, I like seeing people take things apart, even though I don't care. That there's a sort of like, oh, well, look. It's almost like, it's like if I bring out a thing that's tiny and I'm like, look at this. This is sterling silver. It is exactly 1-inch scale. And look at the filigree on it. Like, this might as well. If you blew this up in a machine right now, it would look exactly the same, 12 times as big. And it's a difference between someone being like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then someone being like, well, I'll be damned. Do you know what I mean? It's
Absolutely. Most
people are like, well, I'll be damned. Like, they appreciate it, but they're not like, the motor in their brain isn't like spinning, spinning, spinning. But we have the sort of like, awe.
That first moment, and maybe I feel sad for the you know, millennials and the generations to follow, because they may not have this moment. Remember when you made those tiny little newspapers?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I was in grade school, and I don't know what the deal was, but we all got a tiny little newspaper.
I didn't get one. I have a tiny newspaper. Why didn't I have one?
That's what I'm afraid of. I think there's a point where, you know, newspapers. Well, I hope. Yeah.
Well, I didn't get a tiny newspaper in school. I just had to like go buy at a miniature store like a tiny.
Oh
newspaper.
Yeah, no. I mean, this. I don't know. This was like a promotional thing, like made perhaps by the newspaper.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
So it was
tiny newspapers. Intern.
Yeah, check eBay.
You made a noise like you were super worried that you had to look it up. Oh, tiny news. Put tiny newspaper in Milwaukee, because I wonder how localized that was.
Yes.
Do you remember what was in the newspaper?
Well, the paper there was the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel at the time. Or was it? No, actually, the Sentinel was in the morning and the Journal was in the evening, and now it's they combined. But it may have been that newspaper. But that tiny little thing, and that adults made that mm-hmm. and then thought that it was, you know, like you could. Yeah, it just put a different twist on it. Like it wasn't a toy. Like I'm not really going to play with a tiny newspaper, but I totally loved it.
Yeah.
And then ever since then, now I've just been gathering a little bit of a library of how, you know, because I want to wire like dollhouses with electricity and things like that.
Awesome. We can, I mean, you know,
track lighting.
Yeah.
I have like a box full of LEDs and
I mean that really lighting something, I guess it's true of a stage set, anything. I really appreciate lighting designers. It's something I didn't think a lot about, but now that I think about it, like things like that, I mean that really brings something from a sort of still 2D kind of thing, even if it's 3D, like a dollhouse, like the difference between having a little lamp that clicks on or like having Christmas lights on a tiny Christmas tree that light up.
It really
makes a difference. Yeah. It makes a huge difference.
And that's what's great. I have to praise the internet too. The internet totally turned me into a modeler. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And now I can like, there's so much knowledge and expertise that people share.
Yeah.
And you can figure out how to, you know, make something look rusty and mm-hmm. dirty. It's great. It's good.
Well, that's the other telltale thing, right? Is that that's like you said, those are the ultimate details. Like when you see a movie that's set, this is not coming from me. This is what someone else observed. But when you see a movie where like every vintage thing, it's set, it's like a period piece, but like everything looks great. Like, wait a minute. Not every car in the 50s was brand new and like cherry. Do you know what I mean? Like people still had cars for a few years that got rusty and dinged. But, you know, and I think sometimes those kind of exacting details that make you go, oh, yeah, I'm just watching a movie. I'm not like that. That's pulled me out of it because I need to see like an old rusty truck that someone let go to pot that they're still driving around. I can't just always see like this beautiful shiny Studebaker and think,
oh yeah,
like, oh,
every even if it's plastic and it's a diorama, it has to have a story,
right? Yeah,
it has to have like the tanks with the bullet holes in them and the soldier sitting on a sandbag smoking a cigarette with a copy of some French tabloid in his lap.
Amazing.
Waiting for General Patton to roll through.
Did you find anything about the tiny newspapers?
I can't really find the specific ones, but I found a site on Pinterest that you can get them. Like we can buy them. Also, I went down a rabbit hole and I found some tiny boxes of detergent.
Oh, do they have real detergent in them?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Oh my, that's a whole stack of tiny papers.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah.
And now we're talking about a newspaper, which is like going the way of the dodo, it seems like, because of the internet.
Yeah.
A tiny croissant? Sure. I'm sure we sold tiny croissants. But, I've never been more sure of anything in my life.
There's a point where we're going to have tiny phones that work, you know, that like are still just the size of your thumbnail, but they still turn on.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could all be voice command, so it won't even need to be that you have to be able to press any buttons, probably. Be like one big button, and then you just voice command it. And then you swallow it, it goes inside your body, and then you're part machine, where it'll be part Android.
Can I ask about your miniatures?
Yeah, well, I don't have, I mean, again, it's sort of a rabbit hole that would be a little easy to spend all my money on because when I worked at the miniature store in San Francisco, I saw the amount of money that gets poured. Like, if you have, the problem is that once you have seen the best version of something, then when you go to a hobby store and there's like, you know what I mean? Like, this is a pitcher and two glasses, but they look more like dinky plastic because they're more affordable and mass produced. You know that you unfortunately know that, like, you know, Baccarat actually does make their own tiny crystal goblets. Like, some person got them to do that. And so, and like, you can get like beautiful little bone china, because this is like, it can be a consumptively expensive hobby. And I saw all of these like rich people in San Francisco who just had money to burn. And so they would come in and just like, it became like this incredibly expensive hobby. So I know now that that stuff is out there, but that, and so that's what I want, but that's also like way not affordable at all. So that's, so I have a few, like when you guys come over to my house in LA, I'll bring out my like box that has all of these different little, like, you know, this is this, but it's not together in a diorama or like in a space, except for a few things I pulled out when I took a bird feeder that, like a ceramic bird feeder that has a hole on either side, but is basically just, you know, an enclosed dome, kind of like a Fabergé egg if there was holes on either side. But it broke, and so when I glued it back together, I was like, oh, I don't trust this to be outside. So I turned it into a little bear cave. So there's two little bears, a little like a mama bear and a baby bear, and they're like sitting in little chairs, and there's like a little campfire, and they have a little fire going, and a little tea kettle. There's a little dustpan and broom, like a little broom and dustpan over like in one corner. There's a couple of little paintings on the wall. There's a little bowl of berries. And I think one of them is reading, like, has holding like a post, like a tiny postcard.
Aww.
So anyway,
just need a little newspaper on a footstool.
Listen, they should get that newspaper delivered every day. And then I used to have my, and then we have to get into this MASH game. So I'll, maybe I'll put you in charge of that, Deborah. There was a, and then for a while in front of my house in the front window, this is back when I was living with Chris Hardwick, and he appreciated and respected my love of miniatures. For some reason, one day I was like, oh my God, I like ran into the house and was like, holy shit, I think we have mice. I think I found, and he was like, oh no, what shit? And I was very convincing because I'm a very good actor. And I was like, no, I was gardening outside, and I think I found where they're getting into the house. Fuck, what are we going to do? And he was like, God damn it. And I brought him out, and I like pointed to this thing, and what I had made out of balsa wood, a little rounded door with a little bead as the doorknob and little doormat, and then some mail, like some miniature postcards sitting on the doormat. I was like, see? And that was, so that stayed there for a while, and then it all blew away. That's my jam.
Oh yeah.
That's the jam.
It's rewarding. Have yeah. you've been to the Museum of Jurassic Technology?
No. And I know. I tell other people to go there and I haven't been there. It's open at weird times and it's on the other side of the city. I know. I've kind of been like,
Here's the thing that, like, I want to say on your on
you're mad at
in
me.
In for the public, because it was new to me. I've been there like three times and I have yet to, I'm going to go next time I go, the fourth time, I will ask to see the basement.
Oh.
That's a thing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
There's a basement.
Is it private?
There's more stuff. You just simply have to let the ticket taker know that you are in the know. And could you please see?
Can you please wait, and can we please basement? Go together?
Yeah, I would like to come.
It's, yeah, absolutely. That place definitely warrants multiple visits, because I've been there on only one occasion where the owner was upstairs playing the accordion, and they had a little incense fire burning up on the rooftop with the doves.
Mm.
I don't know if you know. Do you know about the rooftop
no.
with the doves?
No.
It's off of a little tiny doorway off of their tea room upstairs. That place is full of mysteries.
I hate myself right now.
And so just,
I've never hated myself more.
I love that place so much.
I've never hated myself more for not having still gone. I'm never on that side of town, and I think on two or three occasions I have been over there for some work thing and been like, I'm going, and then I go and it's not open, and I, like, somewhere in my mind I got bitter. I was like, it's never open. But that's what's wrong with me. I know. Listen, I know. I'm full of self-loathing.
California
right now.
Treasure. I've out of town guests, everyone I've ever taken, they've just, I don't know, and I want to find out. I think it's just more of, you know, more oddities and more pieces. But yeah, there's, you know, everything in there just is so much fun.
God damn it. All right, listen, we got to get into the Smash game. Well, let me give you some.
Was she supposed to have all these
let's
filled
get started.
Out by now?
No. But listen, I'll start you off, and then we can share the responsibility of this. Well, no, I mean, this is just for Nate, and like, I'll fill it out, or you fill it out. But like, for example, let's start with this category. Money is no, what's that word? Money is no object. Money is no.
Yeah, that's right.
Object. That sounds good. Money is no obstacle. I don't know. Three like miniature worlds that you wish you could build. Like you suddenly have an extra room in your house and three different, kind of miniature worlds that it would be really fun to be building and have all the time in the world to work on and all the resources.
Okay.
So that could mean like, oh, just this, like the town I grew up in, or it could mean like this alternate planet that you create, or it could mean, you know, a model train or a little airfield, whatever.
Yeah. One of them is going to be a moon base. The second one would be, what's the big, Mayan temple, the place everybody wants to go,
like,
Chichen Itza or what
yeah.
is it? Yeah. That Chichen Itza. Just a Mayan temple. Three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah. One more. Basically, how MASH works is by a process of elimination, you'll end up with one thing from each category in your future.
It's a small town in France.
Oh, love it.
You know, those little brick roads. Like,
yeah. Oh, man. Great, great, great.
Yeah. Because then you can do the like the stucco peeling off the brick and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, great.
An ivy,
and listen,
exactly.
Tiny croissant.
Oh, little lamps.
That's
little
gonna be
tiny good. Street lights.
Oh yeah. Oh god damn it. All right, listen.
So moon base, temple.
French town. I love it. Okay.
I wrote down other things.
Yeah, please. Category.
I did write best miniatures, so we already did that. Top whatever. I wrote down Top Gun favorite characters.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, great. Let's do, let's start with, if you were a Transformer, what car would you be? Three.
What car would I be? Do you happen to know what some of the cars were? I know there was
But like, this is you.
Oh, I get to be whatever.
This is you're building it. So whatever car you think would be fun to transform into, three.
The first car I ever had, Ford Pinto.
You're so amazing.
Which would be kind of cool because then he'd have like this like big old booty, and if you hit it, it explodes.
Yeah. Oh, amazing.
That was an awesome car. It was stick,
amazing.
And I loved it, but it
two
just
more.
Got a bad name. Go on. What was it? Oh, two more cars, right? Or two more.
Yeah.
This is all.
Your own Nate's world.
This is all. Oh, three of them.
Yeah.
Ford Pinto, a radio wagon.
What's that?
The little radio.
Oh, I was like thinking it was a car.
And
sorry, guys.
One of those old, like the first bicycle with the big front wheel and the little tiny one.
Oh yes, just put OG bike.
OG bike, yeah. It's a lot of real simple tech that I want to transform into.
No, that's great.
It's like, listen, I'll turn into like...
That third one is very steampunk.
Yeah.
It's very steampunk. Yeah. You're like, I'm a transformer who has a monocle.
Yeah.
And I transform into
and
a
And I turn into a spaghetti strainer.
That's right. Exactly right. I also love... let's do the sort of child profession. Like three imaginary jobs that don't have that they can or they don't have to have the sort of like the way we think of jobs when we're young, so it doesn't have any of the monotony of any job. It's sort of this like three alternate universe jobs that you have. That just sound fun.
Butterfly sniper, that might be just because it's alternate and I feel like I could get away with it for that, just that alternate reality. I would like to, it's kind of like roller coasters, but I would like to, I feel like in this alternate reality, I have the ability just to like pull slip and slide material as far as like, just, I can just keep, like, it just comes out of my hand like Spidey. And so slip and slide, man.
Is that also, is that almost like how you get around? Like you jet out a slip and slide and then you slip down wherever you're going?
And it's meant for, and it's, but it's just not just, it's not just for me. Like whatever I lay out, it's like for the masses.
Oh,
And it's just enjoyable. Slip and slide. I don't know if I can provide the water.
Someone else.
Somebody else.
Just show up for that.
Has to do that. But I would just extrude this yellow plastic from my wrists.
This is MASH in its most elevated form.
Okay,
this
so we have got
exactly what I want.
This is kind of just, this is a little bit of like a meditative kind of thing. I would like to be one of the, like an air purifier. Like, you know how
just wherever you go, the ions in the,
yeah, you know how, yeah, like the things, yeah, either like that I just like sit somewhere and I just breathe, and it makes the world a better place.
I know he's, listen, now everyone who's listening to this has a crush on Nate. All right, let me put this in here. Now he's embarrassed. Let me throw this one in here because it's a MASH tradition, and this is vacation home. You could, let's just assume you can slip and slide your way to any of these three locations, and it can be reality based or it could be totally fiction. It could be like you love, you know, The Hobbit, and you would go to Middle Earth, or you know, Star Wars, and you want to be in Cloud City, or whatever.
Oh, that was a question.
Three vacation homes, but they don't have to be reality based, or they can be if you're like Tokyo, Japan, also acceptable.
I'd like to vacation in Captain Nemo's underwater base.
Yeah, great one.
Second one, Catalina Island. Never been there. It's like kind of like your museum.
I've never
of
been there
Jurassic
either.
Technology. It's just
a serious field trip.
Yeah, it's
multiples.
The last one's like a castle in Scotland.
Yeah, I'm on board for every single one of these. Okay, and then another MASH tradition that I have to get out of the way is like a lady companion, or like it could be like it could be like a one night stand. It could be like your alternate universe wife. It could be some combination thereof, like part time lover, like the Stevie Wonder song. This can be, you know, listen, it can be, you know, Angelina Jolie, but it could also just be like Jessica Rabbit. It could be Deborah Baker Jr. It could be, you know, the character that Meryl Streep played in blah blah blah, and it's timeless, ageless. It can be like, you know, I don't know, Sophia Loren circa 1950 or whatever.
No. This first one goes without saying, Annie Potts in Designing Women. I was at a particular age.
Her character?
She could, like, well, Annie Potts, but I could, like, get really specific and say who she was that, like, in Designing Women.
I know. I know. This whole podcast has just been that. I'm really glad you're here because I need someone to share these looks.
Honestly, I could just do Annie Potts three times. But
you're like Annie Potts of Ghostbusters, exactly. Annie Potts of Designing Women.
That's really actually, yeah.
Great. Annie Potts and Pretty in Pink.
Pretty in Pink. No, I will mix it up. Catwoman.
Great.
Which one?
The cartoon. Like the one, yeah,
like with comics.
I want to get this right.
Deborah's subtly gesturing at herself.
You might get to go to the baseball game. That, let's just leave it at that.
Invite you can, I you said can sleep come. On it, and if you invite me tomorrow, I know you really mean it.
And I've been really hush hush about it, and she keeps bringing it up.
Yeah.
So one more. Fantasized about so many women. So you can edit this out, so I don't feel bad.
I won't, I could.
You have to pick a real one after that.
Who really is just... Who do I want to go to these places with?
Yeah, that's a great... Yep, that's exactly right. Exactly right. By the way, this is all... Because this is a peculiar type of improv, I guarantee in 2 hours you're going to be like... Why didn't I say blah, blah, blah? There's a lot of... I don't want this to be steeped in regret, but I've been told that sometimes people wish they could change their answers. But that's, unfortunately, not how improv works.
Yeah, no. I'm going to be drunk at a baseball game.
And I, by the way, have not asked you for your favorite anything.
No. I think it's...
Oh, and if you want to go to that baseball game, you better come up with an answer, because it's almost noon.
You know, I feel like it's some of those hot-blooded Italian performances that I've seen in some of those gangster movies that somebody really should get some. I'm drawing a blank. I feel horrible. We definitely have to edit this out because I can't come up with this name without
no.
like with like.
Listen,
who's in Goodfellas?
Oh yeah. Like Annabelle Ciora? No, that's not her.
No, but she's. I wouldn't kick her off the list.
Yeah. Lorraine Bracco? No.
Ray Liotta's wife. Is that
Lorraine Bracco?
Is that Lorraine Bracco?
Lorraine Bracco. I mean, that's not a current picture, but Debbie Mazur.
It wasn't Debbie Mazur, I don't think. Well, she's certainly in it.
Gina.
Now they're just scrolling through. Now,
yeah,
now
Lorraine
we find
Bracco.
Out you have an idea. Yeah,
Lorraine Bracco.
Yeah, I think that is a quintessential. Woman who is the feisty,
hot-blooded,
yeah, it's great.
I would say like Sharon Moonlighting, but I just feel like she's not as accessible. She's
that was
too big
what
a star.
That was what I was gonna suggest also. But let's go back to some of the stuff that you wrote down, Deb. Let me figure out how to make it into a category. Oh, how about Let's do the Top Gun thing, but let me turn it into this, because this is a perennial favorite also. Three movies that you can jump into and live in that world. And it doesn't necessarily mean you become one of those specific characters. It means that you can go in, have whatever experience you want in that world with those characters. Mm-hmm. Like a Top Gun, like you could fly around with Goose and Maverick.
Are you suggesting that I have to actually have universe knowledge and skills to slide it, or I just want to?
Yeah, you can just go. You can just go in and what would I say? I would say that I would want to go into Sense and Sensibility and just hang out in that world.
Yeah.
Just go. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And just spend time with those people.
I'm just gonna write movie day trip.
It's great.
I could definitely do that with Top Gun. Obviously, I've seen that movie so many times. Please do, because. Yeah. What movie can I step right into?
Would you want to go into a gangster type movie if you knew that?
Fuck that. Guns and shit.
I extracted the lady from it. Don't need to set foot in. Thank you.
Chariots of Fire.
Oh, great.
I wouldn't keep pace with those guys for very long, but the movie looked really beautiful. Tron. Fuck Tron.
Oh, Nate.
Sorry.
God damn it. It's my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah, if I'll be honest, Top Gun and Tron are definitely honest. The other one, I think I just made that up.
Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, I can do something because Tron feels so good. I do. Well,
I would pick Tron three times.
It's that song. It is the song. But
By the way, side note: my friend Paul, that I used to host dinner in a movie with, we both realized we had never seen Chariots of Fire, and he said, I have not seen it, but based on my limited knowledge, I would have to assume it's a movie about a big chariot race. Chariot catches on fire. Horse writes a beautiful song about it. Tron, Top Gun. If you need to swap out, you can.
No, it is. I'm going to swap out. Sorry, Chariots of Fire. Great movie.
Tron.
Great song. But you're now going to have three brutally honest films that I want to be part of.
I think it's great.
And Herbie the Love Bug.
Oh, Herbie.
Those movies destroyed.
Herbie Love Bug pin that I wear sometimes.
Yeah, no. Feel right at home, those three.
Yeah. God, excellent answers. Outstanding. How many categories do we have left?
Two.
Okay, what else do you have on your list that you think could transform into a good category?
I mean, you didn't talk about Clown School, and I think that's a travesty. Halloween costumes.
Oh, we talked about cooking, and I do want to say quickly a category that has to get in there is three foods as specific as the Danish Kringle, for example, as you want, or just hamburgers. Three foods that you can have whenever you want with no health repercussions. Snap of your fingers, they just appear, and it just appears in front of you. You can have as much or as little as you want, but you can have it whenever you want.
Which
and it could be like
the last category or the second last?
Doesn't matter.
What can I say? Pizza?
Yeah, it's a perfect food.
Snap my finger. Malted milkshake.
Wonderful.
One more. Raspberries.
Lovely. Okay, we got our next and final category. I got to get you out of here if you're going to go to that game. Final category. Deborah, any thoughts? Could be you could give him like a superhero power. You could give him a skill. You could say you wake up tomorrow and you have three new skills that you've sort of downloaded Matrix style. Like you sort of suddenly know Kung Fu, or you suddenly know how to be a clown. You already do know how to do that, even if you didn't go to clown school.
Yeah, that's why I went to school.
Or it could be like three mentors, like three people from any time and place that you could call and ask for advice, or who would be like happy to hear from you. Like, oh, I can call, Don Knotts, and we can chat about blah, 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 or whatever. Just go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm only saying that because Dana won't stop talking about how much he loves Don Knotts. Yeah, could be three. It could be, yeah, that you can, but they you have access to their, like, if you you call up President Abraham Lincoln and he's like, Nate, great question. You know what I mean? Mm.
They can take care of what ails me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you could just call them and shoot the shit if it's just someone funny.
But this is like, just, this is three historical, it's got, is that what we,
doesn't have to be from history, but it could be just someone living, it's just like keeping it wide open. Yes. It could even be someone fictitious, like, I want to be able to talk to Batman, but you probably don't want to do that. Just three lifelines. There you go.
Elon Musk.
Great.
Bill Murray. I'm sorry, I guess you try to find a woman. Exactly. That's what
that's what this is for. He will.
And
he will.
Wow. I want to make sure I got all my needs covered. I don't, Paula Deen.
That's a list right there. Okay. Deborah, do you know what to do next? In the middle square where that smiley face is.
Yep.
And you're going to ask Nate, you're going to say, tell me when to stop. Don't let him see what you're doing. You can draw a spiral. You can draw hash marks, whatever it is. And don't take too long, Nate. Don't be like a minute in, because then she'll have like 16 hash marks. So that's the process of elimination. That's what we're going to use to determine what your mash future holds.
And make a spiral?
Anything you want that will enable you to count, like it could be zigzags and you count the points, row, whatever you want, that will be a way.
Pentagrams.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Stars.
But don't look at her and tell us when to stop starting now.
Stop.
Okay. I'm going to pause this. We're going to do some very complicated calculating. We'll come back to the listener. It will seem as if no time has passed with your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Okay.
Okay. Let's have a look. This is exciting for me because I've never not done. So this is a surprise for me also because Deborah took care of all the details, which, as we know, is that's where the devil is. Uh-oh, I have one problem, which is that we don't know whether he ended up with one of these top two categories. Let me do it real quick. Oh, great. Okay.
I hope so, I'm in Tron with Annie Potts.
First of all, you have a mansion. So good job.
Good job.
Your mansion is in, oh, well, yeah, your mansion is a Scottish castle.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Inside your massive, gorgeous Scottish castle, you also have a tiny French town. A room that contains a beautiful, tiny French town that you've been working on. When you need to take a break from that and you want things to, you really want to get the adrenaline going, rest assured you can pop into Top Gun and fly jet planes as much as you want. When you need to get a little energy, you need to reboot with some sustenance, just handfuls of raspberries whenever you want them, whenever, doesn't matter.
That sounds great.
In a different alternate universe, you're a butterfly sniper.
Yeah.
I don't know if the way that you stay, the way that you get around or the way that you sort of stay stealth about that is that you can turn into, you transform into a old timey bike. But whether you use it to butterfly snipe or not, know that you have that ability. I'll tell you who's going to be real interested in your ability to transform into a machine is your very good buddy, Elon Musk.
Yeah.
If you need any advice on any of this, Listen, what can I say? You're boning Lorraine Bracco from...
Yeah. See, this Goodfellas. Seems like you're talking about Richard Branson through all this. I'm sure he knows Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're basically Richard Branson. Good work.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I think that's it. I think I covered everything. That's great. It's a great result.
No, that home situation sounds exactly how it'll be.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's solid. Nate, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you, Janet. This was a treat.
Everyone, I want you to be sure to tune in and watch our show. It's called Stand Against Evil. You are not on Twitter anymore. You were, and then it looked like... Then I was like, wait, I thought I was... And then you were gone. No? Long story short, you're not on it.
Is IFC going to hear this? I'm on Instagram.
Okay, there you go.
I think I will be on Twitter. I know I have the 30 days to like just give this some thought.
Right.
But I've got to figure out a different way to engage with Twitter.
I understand that.
And so to be determined.
I understand that. Instagram, are you just at Nate Mooney?
It is at NTMOONEY.
Perfect. There's one last piece of business. This probably will be your least favorite part of the entire podcast, but because this category is Boys of Summer, I do ask that you a cappella sing whatever snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer comes into your mind, and that will conclude our time together. No pressure.
I'm just trying to hear just a divot of it. Can we cue just a little bit of it up for
our intern will pull something up.
I can see you. Your bronze skin shining in the sun. Oh, that's where the boys are. I can see you running in the dark. I can see that that's where the boys are.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.